Hey, what's going on, Clipper people, Clipper folks? It's me, William the Opinion Updike.
And I am still positive, Chuck Mockler.
We are Locked On Clippers, part of the Locked On NBA Network.
Hell yeah.
Season may be done, but we're still bringing you Clippers content 5 days a week.
Oh, if anything, the season just started up. You know, the offseason is some people's season.
I like that. We're already on the jump for the 21 season.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be kicking things off today with the start of our bench season grades.
Mm-hmm.
Fittingly, we're going to kick things off with the captain of the bench, Lou Williams. Talk about his postseason performance, which a little rocky.
Weird one, kind of.
Kind of a weird one, definitely, definitely. So there's some good stuff to talk about there. And then in the second segment, we're going to kind of talk about the panic, the collective panic. After a collapse like this, it gets very difficult to judge what is a proper reaction and what is an overreaction.
And we've all had it, and we're not trying to say that like everyone's overreacting. Like I've had some insane thoughts too.
I am the guiltiest, as anyone else. So we're going to kind of talk about a couple of things that might be panic reactions, and a couple of things that could be quality reactions.
Yeah.
And then we're going to wrap things up for you with a classic, Love, Mary, Quarantine.
Oh, yeah.
So all that and more coming up right about now.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So we begin the bench grades with Lou Williams postseason. We had him for the full 13 playoff games after he missed some time due to enjoying some wings from his favorite establishment. Which people seem more upset about now that we lost, which I'm like, look, can't be upset about it now.
Oh, I didn't realize that this talk had resurfaced. I thought we were past this.
Yeah, some people were upset about it. I've also been on the LA Clippers subreddit too much, and they are not having a good time right now. Stats for Lou Will in the playoffs. He averaged 13 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, and 26 minutes per game. His splits were pretty rough. 42% from the field, 23% from 3. 81% from the line, just under 3 free throws a game compared to almost 6 a game in the regular season.
Yeah.
Only played 2 less minutes per game in the playoffs, too. Plus 4.5 net rating, which kind of surprised me.
That definitely surprises me.
That could be a stats.nba glitch, but I saw that and was kind of like, huh, okay. We mentioned how things were kind of weird because part of his game sometimes he looked better defensively than he did offensively.
Yeah. I thought his defense, like there was a lot more effort. I mean, it doesn't really bounce off the page. I mean, he averaged around the same amount of steals as he did in the postseason last year, about the same amount of boards. But the eye test,
it was crazy.
I feel like the eye test looked a little bit more promising, at least from an effort standpoint.
Yeah. Like, he was, like, kind of battling for loose balls. Like,
yes.
It looked like a different kind of Lou Will on that end of the court. And
agreed.
I think part of that might have been frustration playing next to Reggie Jackson.
Agreed.
Like, he was at one point yelling directions at Reggie during a game, which you're like, dude.
I had forgotten about that, but good call. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a few times calling out the defensive coverages and telling Reggie where he needed to be, and it appeared that there was some tension there.
Yes. But he also did some classic Lou things on defense. Like, it wasn't all good. Like, there were times when, like, him and Trez were double teaming like Jeremy Grant.
Some of that
just
stuff
wide
was
open.
Bad. I mean, like, look, in the playoffs, I think you a little bit have to look at the Lou Williams and Trez minutes as a bit of an anomaly. Because in a playoff scenario, I got to be honest, man, that's not a duo that should be sharing the floor.
Well, and at this point, in this playoffs, it was a trio of Reggie, Trez, and Lou. So it was even worse.
Yeah.
Which is what made it really
Reggie
difficult.
Got booted there pretty early on in that second series.
Thankfully. He did his best to make things harder for the Mavs and Nuggets. But, I mean, the shooting, I got to give him a D+ for this postseason.
Wow. Okay, so why D+? Just the shooting
you
splits?
You got to be efficient. We can't have him shooting 23% from three. That's not how... That just can't... You don't win games with that happening in a playoff scenario. He has to be efficient. He's not getting as much minutes. Like, I mean, the defense was good, but we don't have him for that, right?
Like,
we needed more offense.
Yeah. No, I definitely see that argument. My thing is like his average this year was pretty close to what his career average is in terms of points in the playoffs.
That's fair.
I don't really see a 35-year-old making a huge jump offensively, especially when he's getting, you know, significantly less touches.
But the 23% from the like, that's the thing. Like, if that's just up to 33%, like
great. The best he's ever shot in the playoffs is like 38%. He's normally around like, you know, he's normally around like 28, 30, like yeah, low 30%. This for me is more of a...
maybe C minus instead of D plus. I don't know.
I'm kind of on the C minus train. I actually might even be willing to go C plus just based on effort, which I felt was notable. Yeah, he had some difficulty. Like, his overall field goal percentage was pretty close to what it is for the regular season. Obviously, like you said, the three-point shooting did fall off a cliff.
Dismal.
And if it was just him, I would be like, yeah, that's unacceptable.
But it was also Sham and like...
It was everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
It was everybody.
Yeah, but I don't... So you're grading on a curve then in this scenario? Because like everyone else on the bench shot poorly, so he gets kind of a pass?
Yes and no.
What does that mean?
It means exactly what I said.
That's... I don't like that logic.
But like my thing is I mean... Would you want more? Of course, yeah. If he had provided more, my letter grade would be higher. But I got to be honest, it was pretty close to, I think if you, you know, like through the regular season, it was pretty close to, I guess, what I expected his playoffs would be like.
The defense, everything, and like, I can't get the idea of Doc talking about how he wanted to avoid Reggie and Sham minutes and Reggie and Lou minutes and then just choosing to play all three of them together, because I'm just like, man, that doesn't put him in a position to succeed.
Absolutely.
Which is another big thing, right?
Absolutely.
Like, he wasn't put in the best position to do well.
Well, and then, like, I just don't feel like, I mean, we keep hammering on this, but, like, I just don't feel like there was a cohesive enough offensive plan when Lou was staggered in with other guys.
Yeah.
To take...
There was no system.
Yeah, like to take advantage of his skill sets, to have him elevate the guys around him.
Yeah.
So I think that that's really, really difficult for me. But yeah, I don't know. Like, to me, it's like it's about kind of what you would expect.
That's fair.
You know, last season, he had the best playoffs of his career last season.
Yeah.
But there was no way that was going to happen again.
For sure.
There was just no way that was going to happen again.
And conditioning might have been a thing, too. You know, like he didn't get as much time with the team after the Magic City suspension. It just, I guess this playoffs run, and I mean this not in a bad way, it left a bad taste in my mouth just because I know he wanted to do better.
Yeah.
Not in that way of like, I'm mad at how he played, but like he's got to be bummed out about the shooting.
I mean, especially. He said so. He said he was pissed off. Like I mean, that's one thing that I, you know, like think what you will about Lou Will. I know he's a polarizing player to Clippers fans, but I mean, he mans up and he accepts like his failures.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like I don't know. He put in the effort that he put in, which defensively I thought was great. Offensively, you know, hey man, some shots didn't fall. That's going to happen.
A lot of shots didn't fall.
Let
us know your letter grade for Lou Will in this postseason. Coming up next, we're going to be talking just kind of some panic vibes.
Okay. So we're back. Sounds like there's a fast motorcycle outside. Anyways, as we talked about at the top of the episode, after a collapse like this, it's really hard to gauge what is the correct reaction. It's hard to gauge how we want to move forward after something like this.
Yeah. And so a lot of people want Doc to be fired, which I think that's with the trading PG in the realm of things that I just don't think are going to happen.
I think that is off the table.
Yeah. Doc isn't going to get fired. One of the reasons Kawhi came to the Clippers was because of Doc, so reported. Firing Doc would be a panic move.
I think firing Doc would be a panic move unless you can build a strong enough case, you know, like at the All-Star break or something. But I still don't even see it. I think Doc is going to get...
Man, firing Doc at the All-Star break next year, things would be so bad if that happened.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm saying, like, if we're like a game below 500 or something, like, I could see that maybe being time to panic.
I would be down for that. If we were a game below 500...
And I don't even know that ups your chances of winning at all, but yeah. Like, I think you got to try something if that's the case.
That's really funny.
Which we'll talk a little bit more about later, but yeah, the Doc thing, I mean, look, man, it's a weird year. You know, we didn't even get that many glimpses at a fully healthy roster during the regular season.
Yeah.
That trend continued throughout the playoffs. And, like, I'm not trying to make excuses or anything, but, like, at a certain point, you know, Doc's hand was a little forced as to the players that he had available to play.
Yeah, especially bubble-wise.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just tough.
But agreed. I mean, like, yeah, clearly there were rotations and stuff that could be improved. Yeah. But
which hopefully we'll see. More Jermichael at the five. Praying to whatever's above us. When do you think it would be time to, like, push the panic button on trade scenarios?
So I don't think that we're going to have any trades happen before the start of the 2020-2021 season.
Yeah, I agree.
Unless there's some sort of sign and trade that they make happen with Trez, which I got to be honest, I don't see that. Like, I don't see the benefit of it for another team.
Lucas, you know? Hahn had a tweet about this. He was like, a Trez sign and trade before the season starts is like, you're not getting a good return on it.
Yeah.
Like, what are you getting for that?
Yeah, well, and, like, you'd have to be
who's
dealing...
Who's a better center than Trez is? You're trading to a team.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only... And or the only guard, reason guess, another but... team would even do it is if they had, like, cap issues, so they had to do a sign-and-trade to yeah. circumvent some of the cap stuff, which, I mean, at that point, like, what asset are you really getting?
Yeah, it seems like maybe a lateral move.
Yeah.
Scenario.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I do think, though, that... this team is going to have to take a long, hard look at itself before the trade deadline, before the All-Star break.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess I'm just opening this up to the peanut gallery, but, like, what record would we have to be at in order for you to feel like, okay, it's time to pull the emergency chute? So for reference, this season we came into the All-Star break at 37-18, which is good for like a 67% win percentage,
yeah.
which is fine. You know, like, it's fine.
I love it. Yeah.
Denver came in at 38-17. So, you know, marginally better, 69% win percentage. The Lakers came in with a monstrous 41-12, 77% win percentage.
Damn.
What are you thinking? I mean, where would we have to be at, assuming that it's going to be around that 55-game mark for the All-Star break? What record would we have to be at for you to be ready to be like, okay, it's, I mean, anything at this point needs to be on the table?
So this is crazy, right? Because we made a trade. We did the Morris trade.
Which, I mean, we had to do in some ways.
Yeah.
Not even necessarily for talent, but just in terms of contracts. Like, we weren't going to re-sign Mo. He's the perfect salary filler to grease the wheels of a trade. And, you know, we had had interest in Morris for, you know, a year.
Years, yeah. Yeah. I think... we'd have to be in pretty... because I'm trying to figure out what dire straits are for this Clippers team next year. Because the pressure's on us even more. The pressure's on Doc more next year.
Yeah.
Because
what if we're at
collapse.
30-25?
Trade everybody. If we're at 30... not everybody. But, like, man, if we're at 30-25, if we're, like, in the 22-plus loss category... and we have relatively normal health.
Yeah.
Which would be healthier than we were last year.
Yeah.
Up until the All-Star break for sure. Yes. People got to get shuffled around at that point.
What if we're at 35-20, which I don't think would put you... I would be surprised if that would put you in the top four teams at the All-Star break.
35-20 with what the West is going to maybe look like next year with the... Warriors, and
I think it might put you
the Mavs are going to make some,
like,
moves
sixth in the West. If you were at 35-20,
I was going to maybe say 20 losses was my thing, but again, that's still like what a 60 whatever win percentage. Like,
yeah,
I think it has to be over like 22 losses.
I'm getting pretty antsy if it's at 20. I gotta be
honest. Oh, I'm antsy. And then I'm kicking myself if we don't make a trade, being like, damn it.
Like, yeah. I mean, once again, the whole point of this segment is we're trying to not overreact or panic. Yeah. But I think if we're at, yeah, if we're at 35 and 20 or 34 and 21, I'm not feeling...
I'm itchy.
I'm not feeling great about where the rest of the season is going without a trade.
Yeah, that's
unless
a good
it
call.
Looks really good on court. Like,
yeah, like if we're just losing close games or we have something where it's like, dude, wow, the Clippers have somehow lost 10 games by less than one possession.
Actually, you know what? That's not making me feel any better. That's making me feel worse.
If it just wasn't bouncing our way, I'd be like, eh, but yeah. I mean, it's... Well, and then with what this system, I'm doing air quotes, is... I think that makes people more itchy for a trade, too. Because there's no real system, right? Theoretically.
Yeah.
Because we don't have one.
Yeah. Well, and all of this is contextual.
Because it's also hard to figure out who fits into the system. Like, we know Morris did, but like...
Yeah, I don't know, man.
It's tough, dude.
It's difficult. And I do think, like, unless you're at the point, like I said at the beginning of this, like, where you need to pull the panic chute, I don't know that making a trade at the deadline is in our best interest. Unless, like,
there's been a lot of team shuffling the last years.
Unless it's in need of a shakeup. Essentially, yeah, ever since the Blake Griffin trade, we've done something at the deadline.
A monumental trade at least once a season. Just shooting the breeze right now. Are there better rotations out there for PG and Kawhi?
So this is something I'm interested in. Just because you and I kind of talked about throughout the season, like, the value of maybe staggering them versus the effectiveness of them being on the court together. In the playoffs, their net rating wasn't great as a two-man lineup. It was like they were like plus 0.6. So it's like essentially neutral. I'm willing to write that off just because like the playoffs weren't great, especially for Paul George.
Yes.
But we didn't really stagger them a whole lot at all. We staggered them a little bit more in the playoffs than we had during the regular season. In the playoffs, they averaged about 38 minutes, and 30 of those minutes were played together, about 79%, just a hair under 80.
Yeah.
And then that was pretty similar to what they played together in the regular season. They played about 24 minutes together per game, which is, I mean, like 2%. In the regular season, it was like 2% higher. So I guess I'm not talking about majorly shaking this up. I'm just saying maybe what if they're playing 75% of their minutes together, and then the other quarter is kind of is varied up, staggering. Because I think looking at the numbers, it seems like, you know, Kawhi performed a little bit worse when Montrez was on the floor. Which, you know, I mean, there's a number of factors at play there. But yeah, maybe Paul George looks a little bit better with that second unit. I think that when you start thinking about the big three with Morris in there too, I do think there's interesting ways, that we could probably assemble talent, to mitigate some of the deficiencies of the bench that we saw in the playoffs.
Yes.
You know, most notably is probably JaMychal at the five. But I do think there's some other staggering available in there. Maybe even bringing in Shamit for Paul George earlier and then having Paul George come out more at the second unit to cover on the defense.
Because you look good with the second unit in the playoffs, a lot of people thought.
Yeah.
And when Kawhi's with the second unit, it's a little like, let's watch Kawhi do his thing.
I agree.
Which is hard to not do because it is Kawhi and, you know, they have some defensive deficiencies. But, I mean, I would, like, a lot of people were praising Doc during the regular season for staggering Kawhi and Paul George kind of later when he started to do it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, so there's...
Because this is the double-edged sword, right? Because we talk about, because, like, I feel like when they're out there, we want them to have the ball in their hands more.
Mm-hmm.
But distribution-wise, neither of them... Kawhi's better at it than Paul George, I think. It's still like this weird thing to figure out. And I think having Trez out there makes things difficult too.
So,
because he's got one thing he does.
I feel like an especially interesting wrinkle is, I mean, as you noted, Kawhi's the better playmaker than Paul George. So I think putting Paul George with that second unit, you know, Lou Will is generally going to have the ball in his hands. Paul George will take the reins, you know, for a couple of possessions. But I think that essentially takes a little bit of pressure off of Paul George. I think that can kind of help build up some of the confidence too. And just, you know, he can help cover for the absolute shit show that is the defense of the second unit.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. Because...
They're staggered about 20% of the time. I'm saying, like, just 5% more.
Well, and I hate to keep beating this drum, but there's no system.
There's no system.
And so there's no system. There's really no, like... Yeah, there's no way to figure out which one fits better because there's not a step-by-step plan.
I think that's why. Pitch, right? I mean, and that's definitely part of the reason why Kawhi looked so wonky with that second unit.
Yeah, because he's like, I have to do everything now.
Yeah,
like, which makes sense.
It's like not clear. It's there's not a clear hierarchy of, you know, who's having the ball, where the ball's going,
and so like
what's happening.
I think if we get a better distributing point guard for the bench,
for the second unit, which I think is our most likely. Like, I know that the point guard conversation is pretty big surrounding the Clippers, but like, I mean, I think we're both on the same page that if we do get another facilitator, it's going to be a bench guy.
Yeah, for sure. And then like getting another center who can pass a little more. Like, there's that clip that Justin Russo posted of Trez barreling into the defenders and Kawhi standing in the corner, just, going, just like corner. Hands up, like. So
he's like starfish, and he's yeah, jumping jacks yeah. over there trying to get like, attention.
I think that makes it a little bit better, but that remains to be seen if we even make those moves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we got a spicy one here. Spicy question to end this segment.
Yeah. So Doc alluded to some issues with players and their cardio being a problem in the Denver series, where he said,
which is so annoying to me.
Where he said that, you know, the rotations were difficult because he would have guys asking to be subbed out. And of course, you know, as a good dude, he did not name names.
Yeah, man, that would have been crazy. That would have made this offseason a lot worse.
But I'm just wondering if anybody has any thoughts on who they think these players might have been who were asking to be subbed out, you know, before Doc had changed the rotation.
Man. I don't know. I think it's guys who miss time.
I think, yeah. I mean, I think you're absolutely right.
I think it's maybe Trez, and this isn't a disrespect thing. I think he was maybe just gassed.
Yeah.
And like, didn't. But Trez also doesn't seem like the kind of guy who'd say that.
Trez isn't asking to be out. Said it. Who says that? I think Pat Bev might have been one of the guys.
I don't know.
Paul George.
I could definitely see Paul George asking. I can see him asking a lot. Easier than I could see Pat Bev or Trez asking.
Yeah, that's fair.
Other than that, I don't know. I mean, it's not Kawhi because he.
I don't think it was
great.
Zoo either. Because to be honest, I don't think Zoo was ever asking to.
So we basically only think it's Paul George
or Trez or Pat Bev.
I think it was pretty much just Paul George or. Nah, not Mook.
This is all saying. Unfounded.
Yeah, this is just us
guessing.
Talking. I don't know. If you have any inside info, hit us up at Locked On Clips.
Yeah, who do you think was asking to be subbed out in playoff Oof. Minutes?
Yeah, which that also might have been Doc just kind of politicking too.
It's true.
Being
true.
Like, oh, this was a thing. What anyway? Like, that could be a big thing too.
Yeah, that's fair. You think he's making excuses.
But like friendly excuses, you know what I mean?
That's not
like,
a friendly excuse, man. That's what you're saying is that the players are weak.
Yeah, that's true. And he was kind of throwing him under the bus a little bit. So maybe it was just Doc being Doc. Coming up next, we have a California mascot-themed Love, Marry, Quarantine. But first, Will, what are these Built Bars I keep? Everyone's talking about these Built Bars. All I hear in the cafe that I'm at every day is Built Bar, Built Bar. What is it?
I know. Built Bar is everywhere. The thing is, Built Bar is a nutrition bar.
What?
It's great. It's now new and improved. It has even more delicious flavors than there were before.
I love it.
And trust me, they were already plenty delicious. That's why people were talking about them.
In the cafes.
Built Bars are great. They're healthy. They're perfect for the health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low-calorie. They're low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, which makes them great for the keto diet. Very hot right now. You can also use it with intermittent fasting. Just don't eat anything and then eat a Built Bar.
Just crush a BB.
Best thing about Built Bar is right now we got a promo code for our listeners. If you go to builtbar.com, that's builtbar.com, and use promo code LOCKEDON, all caps, one word, you'll get $10 off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com.
Okay, now that we're all Built Barred up, just... feasting on energy. I was thinking about how much I think I truly just dislike Chuck the Condor as a mascot.
He's a bad mascot.
Because it's Gritty's second birthday. And Gritty, if you're not familiar, is the most lunatic idea for a mascot that a professional sports team has ever done. And it's worked out perfectly for the Philadelphia Flyers.
I feel like it's so Philadelphia.
It's the weirdest thing ever. It's borderline scary.
It's so Philly sports.
Yes.
I love it.
Like
the Philly fanatic.
Yeah, it's just goofy. He's got googly eyes. It's just
like
a big orange haired thing wearing a... I like it too. And so I was thinking of ideas. Happy second birthday, Gritty, if he's listening. Love to have you on the show to talk Clippers basketball. So we're thinking of new mascot ideas to replace Chuck the Condor, who also at one point gave a World War II veteran a wet willy during a game, which did not go over very well with a lot of people. And honestly, come on, man. He's an old man who could barely walk. You're helping him walk. You're giving the guy a wet willy. And since he's the state bird of California, all of these are state themed.
Yeah.
First option, Gary the Grizzly. Pretty traditional mascot situation, just a California grizzly in a sailor outfit.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, like a cartoony one. His gimmick is that he hurls fresh salmon to the crowd every time the coaches wear the salmon polos, which I think will make a comeback. Second option, Tommy the Desert Tortoise, of course, the state tortoise of California. Really big swing here. Again, this is kind of like a tortoise. Maybe he's dressed up like a boat or something like that, or another sailor situation.
He's a tortoise that's dressed up like a boat?
No, he's just a tortoise as a sailor.
Okay. Tortoise as a boat makes... I don't understand it.
That's fair. It doesn't make any sense. Big swing here is that they give Tommy the Desert Tortoise bloodshot eyes for the whole month of April to appeal to the stoner basketball crowd, given his slow movements.
I like it.
He's also kind of boring, given he's a tortoise.
I like it.
Third option, Derek the Dogface Butterfly, of course, the state bug of California. He's a Clippers colorfied butterfly mascot whose gimmick is he never touches the ground and a series of wires suspend him from the air to flutter around the crowd and entertain everybody.
Oh, wow. That sounds very difficult.
I don't think it's that hard. Not in 2021.
I'm going to add one, and this is assuming that Ballmer has the wealth to name.
He does. The answer is he does.
To name that there's a state man, which is like a state animal, but it's a man. And it, of course, is him. The mascot is the little Stevie, which, you know, depicts a...
Not the E Street Band guitarist.
Which, little Stevens.
What about Lil Balls?
Oh, Lil Balls is funny too, yeah. Which depicts, you know, a cartoonish Stephen Ballmer in all of his ripped gingham shirt glory.
What if it's a really skinny body and then a giant Ballmer head? So it's almost a walking bobblehead.
Oh, I kind of like that.
All right. I gotta love Derek the Dogface Butterfly because I think it's pretty possible.
Yeah.
He can drop, you know, Starbucks coffee on people for free, hurl Ludo bird sandwiches at him, all that good stuff. I think I have to marry Gary the Grizzly because this seems like actually a real idea they would do. Minus the hurling salmon at people.
Yeah.
Chuck the Condor's stupid.
Yeah, Chuck the Condor kind of sucks. Sorry, Chuck.
He's got baby Chuck or Chuck Jr., which insinuates there's some universe where Chuck the Condor has procreated with another condor. Would like to meet her.
I mean, that's important. Aren't they endangered?
Absolutely. And you could do, so we went to a school that had the Grizzlies as the mascot, and there was Monty, who at one point was the mascot of the year, and then they had a little Mo, who was like a little mini version
of Monty.
Little
Mo was fun.
Little Bear, that's a good time. And I think I have to maybe quarantine Tommy the Desert Tortoise. I just don't think he gets the crowd hyped up enough.
That's fair.
Maybe it's only for noon games on weekends.
That's fair.
Maybe we have three mascots.
I'm going to do a double love. I'm loving the idea of the Little Stevens. I just think the name Little Stevens is very funny.
Yeah, we could do a title Little Caesars or something like that. Where,
oh my God, if it looked kind of like the Little Caesars thing, but also Steve Ballmer.
Or we bring the Little Caesars guy out and they do like a fun, you know, race or something.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I'm also loving Gary the Grizzly, but I want to make a single modification. I want him to be the Glizzy Grizzly. He's got to be throwing out hot dogs.
That works out, though, because we're like, Clippers are like the hot dog team.
We're the hot dog gun team.
Which is weird. We're carving out a lot of weird niches as a franchise.
The Glizzy Grizzly is hilarious.
Yeah, that's a good time.
It's like kind of Western themed, too, in my head. Like he's
like a cowboy.
He's a sea cowboy.
I wanted to have him with a pipe in his mouth, but they won't do anything tobacco related as a mascot.
Who said it's tobacco?
Okay, they're not doing anything Sherm-related either.
And I'm going to marry... I'm actually going to marry Tommy the Desert Tortoise. I think that this is... Correct me if I'm wrong. I have not seen this as a mascot anywhere before.
I don't think so. Not in professional sports. I guarantee you there might be a weird-ass minor league team.
I mean, the Terps and stuff like that. Like the Maryland. Yeah. I mean,
but Terrapins are like badass animals. Like they look sweet.
Yeah.
Tortoises, they're just big. Tortoises, live a long time.
I think tortoises are dope.
I didn't say they weren't dope. They just don't look as aggressive as a terrapin.
What if it's a snapping tortoise?
Well, it's not because it has to be a desert tortoise because that's the state thing.
Does it, though? This is a mascot, man.
That's true. The Suns have a gorilla. So I think that's fair. Let us know your thoughts on...
I'm quarantining the butterfly, too. Just
I love the butterfly. Dude, the butterfly's a good idea. It's kind of a professional wrestling vibe, I feel like.
The series of wires is just too confusing. If it's just a straight-up butterfly, I'm actually also hugely on board with it. Basically, what I mean to say is all of these are better than Chuck the Condor.
Yeah, 100%. Let us know your thoughts on Chuck the Condor. Does anyone love Chuck the Condor out there?
What if we just changed his color scheme? Even that would be better. Why is he pink?
I do like that his name's Chuck. I respect that.
Yeah, that's fair.
As a fellow Chuck.
I think it'd be more fun if he was Charlie the Condor.
Ugh. Charles the Condor would be like a condor who does your taxes.
He'd be like he'd wear glasses for sure.
He'd be Charles the Condescending Condor.
He'd wear like, glasses for sure.
He'd be like, a lot of useless spending, huh? Anyway, we got to get out of here. Let us know your thoughts on new mascots. Also, shout out to Gritty. We hope you make it 50 more years. Where can these fine people find us?
You can find us on iTunes or the podcast app, whatever the heck it's called now. You can also find us on Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We're on Google Podcasts. We're on Deezer. If you haven't already, please subscribe. Like I said up top, I mean, there's still plenty of Clippers ball to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to continue these bench postseason grades.
Yep.
We're going to talk about some kind of in-depth season breakdowns. There's some good stuff out there. For Clippers fans, lucky enough. So tell your friends to check us out. If you feel so inclined, go ahead, leave a rating or review. We'd love to know what you think of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we'll be back on Monday looking at JaMychal Green's postseason, who he came out. I mean, he might be one of the few.
He was the best bench player for the Clippers in the postseason.
Absolutely. And then there's definitely going to be some hot goss that probably comes out. We recorded this on Thursday.
Juicy.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, probably some stuff's going to happen. And of course, whatever else happens between now and then in Clipperland, I have been positive Chuck Mockler.
And I am William the Opinion Updike. We appreciate you.